This is a production of Cornell University.
From Cornell University's world-renowned turfgrass program, I'm Frank Rossi.
And I'm Carl Scamenti. And this is episode 24 of Turf Talk, brought to you in partnership with our friends at Winfield United. Turf Talk provides just-in-time science-based recommendations to turfgrass managers in the northeastern U.S. So, Frank, we're winding down the season here. We've come to a hard stop in October, going from 80, 85 degrees down to 30 degrees. And one of the things we wanted to do is recap the weather quickly this year and kind of how it relates to climate change. So we had that really short spring. You wouldn't even call it a spring. It was kind of a late winter straight into summer. It heated up really quickly. And we've done the same thing here at the end of the year. We had this hard stop. These patterns last for a long time. And part of that, also precipitation too, right? We had these long stretches of a lot of moisture. And a lot of that can be contributed to climate change and how these patterns kind of get elongated. And so one of the things with climate change is the temperature and precipitation gets really variable throughout the year. But what doesn't get variable throughout the year is the sunlight angle. And today we wanted to talk about late season fertilization. And that's really key when we're talking about that stuff, right?
So, Carl, you absolutely set us up perfect for this conversation. I think and what we'll end with as well is that the reason to couch it in the context of the climate is that traditionally we have done things at certain times of the year based on what we thought was what the research said. And what we're going to talk about today is a big shift in the research, what the research is telling us, and how we're going to adjust the way we manage our nutrients, particularly nitrogen and potassium, in the latter part of the season. And it begins with getting the most out of your fertilizer, right? Mm-hmm. So if we think about efficiency, you're spending money on that fertilizer, number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, you're spending money on putting it out there. Number three, you don't want any of it to leak through the root zone and potentially into the groundwater. So what we know now is, as all those things you say are changing, what isn't changing is the way we rotate around the sun. I mean, mm-hmm. it changes a little bit, but not meaningfully. Mm-hmm. And because of that, while even though the temperatures can be very high, the sun angle is fairly sharp, and that reduces evapotranspiration. And people might think, well, what has that got to do with nutrient management? Well, in the case of nitrogen, nitrogen moves with the water. So if water's moving through the system, nitrogen has the ability to move to the plant and being taken up. Mm-hmm. Late season fertilization, September, October, November, December, all the way down into December on Long Island, mm-hmm. is typically that late season period when people would normally be waiting as late as possible to November, December, and applying those that nitrogen in the latter part of the year. And now we know, number one, what we used to tell you might have been good for the turf, but it's not so good for the groundwater. Mm-hmm. It might have been good for the turf, but you're probably wasting a fair amount of it. Now I'm going to pivot back to you, Carl. What do the numbers say about our efficiency?
Yeah, so Doug Soldat at Wisconsin has done some great research recently. He just did a webinar on TurfNet that we tweeted out on his research regarding nitrogen uptake. And based on when you apply that nitrogen late in the season, September, October, and November, you get a different percentage of that nitrogen actually getting into the plant. So when you apply it in September, about 73% of that nitrogen gets to the plant. That's pretty good. Once you do start applying in October, that efficiency drops to 50%. So only 50% of that nitrogen you're putting down is actually getting into the plant. And November, only 25%. So we're seeing that efficiency, as we're calling it, going down. You're not getting as much into the plant, and that means it's likely leaching through the system.
And I think some of it is, it's important to note from a source perspective, right? Mm-hmm. What are we talking about nitrogen sources? We're talking about, you know, studies with 70% water soluble nitrogen applied in November and December, mm-hmm. is losing about 50% of it through the system. Water soluble sources shouldn't be applied at greater than a half a pound at any time after September, after Labor Day, yeah. unless you really need top growth. And again, if you're on a sports field, that nitrogen applied in the middle of the season will really help you with recovery. But if you've got a lawn, right? Or or even an area that doesn't get that much traffic. Applying a heavy dose, a full pound of N, 70% water soluble, 30% water insoluble, a slow release, you're still getting way more top growth than you need. So we're recommending people look at the source of nitrogen and try to make sure they're not putting on any more than a half a pound of N. And by what you just said, Doug's finding, most of us would tell you that was Wisconsin weather he was looking at. If we brought it over here, maybe we'd think between September and October, the middle, you know, by the middle of September to the middle of October. But again, even that range, what did he find, Carl, relative to the way the plant grew in October and November, independent of fertilizer?
Right. So he was looking at things like root mass growth and shoot growth. And of course, as we all know, root growth was increasing as temperatures decreased. But what was most interesting was that it was independent of fertilizer applications. So he was always seeing the highest amount of root mass in November, but it didn't matter how much fertilizer he had applied. It was always about that same amount of root mass. So, you know, again, when we think about the kind of historical agronomic benefits of fall fertilization, we think about, oh, driving root growth. But really, that's kind of independent of the nitrogen and more dependent on the temperatures decreasing. So we're still getting that agronomic benefit of driving root growth, but we're not having to use as much fertilizer.
Now, the other agronomic benefit that we oftentimes, you know, looked for with these late season applications, Carl, was color in the spring. And it looks like the data shows you still have acceptable color even when you stop your fertilization in the middle of September.
Yeah.
And you still have good spring color.
Yeah. And most importantly, Doug says, you know, if you want that color, you don't have to rely on a heavy fertilizer application in October and November. You can just spoon feed a little bit in the springtime when you want that color, and it'll green up perfectly fine. You don't need to rely on that 3/4 of a pound or a pound in October to get you that spring green up. So those, when you really want the green up, all you have to do is spoon feed it a little bit. That way you don't have to waste all of that extra fertilizer.
And again, if you think about the lion's share of the fertilizer being sold to consumers, thankfully, no one promotes these kinds of things later in the season. But source of N, timing of N, rate of N, big changes to the nitrogen thinking that we've had over the years to improve efficiency and maintain quality. Now, one thing that is really interesting that still gets promoted is the use of potassium late, Carl. And I'll let you ask me a question about how that's changed dramatically over the 12 to 13 years since the research at Cornell got it going.
Yeah. So, you know, when I was first learning kind of the turf grass science, I read, you know, I need a lot of potassium to give me winter hardiness to reduce ice damage and winter damage through the winter. But I was also reading, well, you know, increased levels of potassium increase snow mold. So what did kind of your research along with Dave Moody tell us about, you know, kind of the situations where we do and don't need potassium?
Yeah. And, you know, it started with Micah Woods when we started the original potassium work, and we observed the plots that had received the highest level of K had the most gray and pink snow mold. Now, this has been refined a little bit further, both by when Dave Moody came here and Doug Soldat again in Wisconsin's just publishing a paper on 7 years, 8 years of potassium research in the soil. Again, in creeping bentgrass, showing that increasing potassium leads to increased snow mold. So here is a case, much like nitrogen, Carl, when you apply it and it leaches out, you use it improperly and there's harm. This is a case where you use potassium, and in all grasses, it appears, except for annual bluegrass, you tend to stimulate winter diseases. Now, annual bluegrass is a different animal, right?
Yeah, and so looking at some of Doug's recent research and others' recent research, maybe there's tissue tests that indicate, okay, in annual bluegrass, we need higher levels of potassium to get us through the winter, but all other kind of turf grass species, we don't necessarily need that potassium.
That's right, and you annual bluegrass seems to need it. Again, if you're this is really only applicable to the golf course superintendents.
Right, right.
When we're talking about lawns or even sports fields, there's very little evidence that K even increases traffic tolerance. And I know some of these things are shocking for people because the dogma that exists in our industry is enormously profound. Yeah. How the information gets translated generation to generation. Potassium is one of those nutrients that we should be seeing a significant drop in its use, both in warm and cool season grasses. Mm-hmm. And of course, with annual bluegrass, it appears if that number of that tissue content gets below 1.5-2% or below 2%, you potentially are setting yourself up for winter kill and ice damage and things like that. We also see a reduction in anthracnose infection when we keep potassium. And I don't know, I think it's about 1.5-2%. But what I do know is, because this was a big point of contention when we were doing our work, that if you keep your soil roughly near the MLSN value, which I believe is starts out in the mid 30s.
Yep, 37.
If you keep your number at or above that, in most cases, annual bluegrass is not going to suffer excessively from anthracnose. So we can worry about tissue testing, but this is a clear case of managing nutrients in a progressive way and how we're changing our thinking on the way we're managing nutrients. Nitrogen and potassium in particular are ones that have really changed, particularly with regard to their use at the end of the season.
Yeah, so that wraps it up pretty nicely there, Frank. Thanks as always for coming on and talking about the latest science with us on the 2018 Turf Talk podcast series. Again, brought to you just in time by us here at Cornell University and our partners at Winfield United. You can find us online at turf.cals.cornell.edu and on Twitter or Facebook at Cornell Turf. As always, we're looking for feedback. We encourage you to join the conversation by leaving a review or comment. We're also going to be creating a survey for the end of the year that we'll be putting out on Twitter, asking you guys to give us some feedback on how the podcast went this year and the good things, the bad things, so we can keep adjusting and improving for next year. And with that, for Turf Talk, I'm Carl Scamenti.
And I'm Frank Rossi. Have a great week.
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.